Do you have a message? What's your story? What's your experience? Do you want to tell it? Email us at hello@acute.co.ke and let's make this a reality.
Visit our website and make sure to subscribe to get more of our amazing shows. Acute Media. Express yourself.
Okay, get this. Yagnish Devani, the guy at the heart of the Triton oil scandal,
right,
managed to dodge justice for like 16 years.
Wow.
16 years, over a decade on the run after being accused of siphoning off billions of shillings worth of fuel.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It sounds wild. I
know. It really does.
But here's the even crazier part. After all that time, after finally being extradited back to Kenya, the charges against him were dropped.
Just like that.
So today we're diving deep into the Triton oil scandal, trying to figure out how this all went down.
It's a wild one for sure.
We've got a stack of articles here mapping out everything from his escape to this recent decision that's left everyone scratching their heads.
Yeah, I mean, what's really intriguing about this case is the sheer audacity of it all.
Right.
We're talking about a businessman, once considered a pillar of the Kenyan economy, who seemingly vanished into thin air with a massive amount of fuel that didn't belong to him.
Yeah.
And then just as suddenly, he reappears.
Right.
And the case against him crumbles. There's definitely more to unpack here than meets the eye.
Totally. So let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
Can you give us some background on Yagnish Devani and Triton Petroleum? What were they all about before this scandal broke?
Sure. Devani and Triton Petroleum, they were major players in the Kenyan oil industry.
Okay.
He wasn't some fly-by-night operator.
Right.
In fact, he was often lauded as a successful entrepreneur and even a top taxpayer.
Really?
Triton was a significant fuel supplier, playing a crucial role in the energy sector.
Wow.
It's important to understand this context because it makes his alleged actions all the more shocking.
Okay, so we've got this seemingly respected businessman running a successful company. Then, boom, the Triton oil scandal explodes.
It's like something out of a movie.
What exactly were the accusations against him and the company?
So at the heart of the scandal lies the allegation that Devani orchestrated a scheme to release millions of liters of fuel to Triton fraudulently. This fuel, worth billions of shillings, belonged to the Kenya Pipeline Company.
Oh, go.
And it was supposed to be held as collateral for agreements with other companies, including big names like Emirates National Oil Company.
So to clarify, Kenya Pipeline Company, LTD, owned the fuel.
Yes.
And Devani allegedly pulled a fast one, making it seem like Triton owned it.
Exactly. He was essentially playing a shell game with this fuel, using it as collateral for loans and agreements.
Oh, wow.
While simultaneously selling it off without the actual owners knowing.
That's a bold move, to say the least.
Yeah, incredibly risky.
And I know there were specific charges brought against him in 2009.
That's right. He was charged with fraudulent disposition of mortgaged goods,
okay,
conspiracy to defraud, and obtaining by false pretenses.
Right.
A particularly damning accusation involved Devani selling a massive quantity of jet fuel to Total Kenya.
Wow.
Even though that fuel was already pledged as collateral to Emirates National Oil Company.
Help me understand that first charge.
Sure.
Fraudulent disposition of mortgaged goods. What does that actually mean in plain English?
Imagine you take out a loan and use your house as collateral.
Yeah.
You then turn around and sell that house without informing the lender.
Right.
That's essentially what Devani's accused of doing, but with fuel instead of a house.
Got it.
He allegedly sold off fuel that wasn't technically his to sell because it was pledged as security for another agreement.
Ah, I see.
It's like using the same asset to secure multiple deals without the rightful owners being any the wiser.
So it's like double dipping.
Precisely.
And that's where the charges of conspiracy to defraud and obtaining by false pretenses come in.
Exactly.
He's accused of deliberately misleading others and profiting from those deceptions.
Right.
It sounds like a carefully constructed scheme.
Yeah, definitely well thought out.
So with these charges hanging over his head, what did Devani do next?
Well, this is where the story takes a dramatic turn.
Okay.
As the scandal broke and investigations intensified, Devani pulled off a vanishing act.
What?
He fled Kenya in 2008.
He just disappeared.
Leaving behind a web of allegations and a trail of financial chaos.
So he became a fugitive.
An international man of mystery.
Did anyone know where he'd gone?
Kenyan authorities issued a warrant for his arrest and launched an international manhunt.
Right.
It turns out he had landed in the UK, where he remained for years fighting extradition every step of the way.
He fought extradition.
Yeah.
What were his arguments against returning to Kenya to face these charges?
He raised concerns about the conditions of Kenyan prisons.
Okay.
And the fairness of the Kenyan justice system.
So was this genuine fear or a calculated delaying tactic?
It does make you wonder. I mean, if he was innocent, wouldn't he want to clear his name?
Yeah.
Delaying things only makes you look more suspicious.
That's a valid point. It seems counterintuitive for someone claiming innocence to resist facing their accusers.
You would think.
But ultimately, after years of legal battles, he was extradited back to Kenya in January of this year, 2024.
It took a long time.
So the long arm of the law finally caught up with him.
You can't run forever.
He was back on Kenyan soil, ready to face trial.
And this is where the story takes that unexpected twist I mentioned earlier.
Okay. Before you reveal the bombshell, I think we need to take a moment to let our listener digest this information.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in.
We've covered a lot of ground already. A once-celebrated businessman accused of massive fraud,
right.
A daring escape.
Like a movie.
Years as a fugitive, a hard-fought extradition. It's like a real-life thriller.
Absolutely.
So for our listener out there, take a moment to consider what you've learned so far.
Yeah.
What stands out to you? What questions are swirling in your mind?
And when we come back, we'll dive into the stunning turn of events that brought this intricate saga to its current perplexing conclusion.
This is wild.
Buckle up.
I'm still trying to process everything we just talked about.
I know, right?
It's mind-boggling to think that Devani evaded capture for so long.
Yeah.
And just when it seemed like he was finally going to face trial for these serious charges, something unexpected happened.
Yeah.
You mentioned a shocking decision by the Director of Public Prosecutions.
Right.
What exactly was it?
In October 2024,
yeah.
The DPP dropped all charges against Devani.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah.
They just let him go?
It seems that way.
After 16 years of pursuit, all that legal wrangling, they simply dropped the case.
It's certainly an unexpected turn of events.
I'm floored. Why on earth would they do that?
Well, to understand it, we need to delve into the state of the prosecution's case.
Okay.
It turns out that over time, their position had significantly weakened.
So after all these years, they didn't have enough evidence to secure a conviction.
That appears to be the case.
That's hard to believe, considering the initial accusations seemed so strong.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But several factors contributed to the case's unraveling.
Okay.
Perhaps the most significant blow came when a key witness, former Energy Minister Kiraitu Murungi, became uncooperative and refused to testify.
Now, that's interesting. Why would a former minister, someone presumably familiar with the inner workings of the government,
right,
be reluctant to testify in such a high-profile case? It definitely raises some eyebrows.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
His refusal to cooperate sparked speculation and fueled theories about potential behind-the-scenes influences and political maneuvering that might have played a role in the case's outcome.
Wow.
It's a glaring loose thread in the narrative.
It's like a missing piece of the puzzle that leaves you wondering what picture it would complete if it were there.
Exactly.
Was the uncooperative minister the only obstacle the prosecution faced?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay.
The DPP also pointed to the passage of time as a major factor.
Right.
Some witnesses had passed away, while others, crucial to the prosecution's case, had relocated.
Okay.
Making it difficult, if not impossible, to secure their testimony.
So time, in this case, really wasn't on their side.
Not at all.
It's like the longer the case dragged on, the more evidence slipped through their fingers.
It's a common problem in these types of cases.
It must have been incredibly frustrating for the prosecution team.
Absolutely. They were contending with fading memories.
Right.
Missing witnesses. And a growing sense that the case was slipping away from them.
It's hard to imagine.
And it's worth remembering that the burden of proof rests entirely on the prosecution.
Right.
They have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Devani committed these crimes.
And without solid evidence and reliable witnesses, that becomes an almost insurmountable task.
You're absolutely right.
It makes you wonder about the impact this has on the victims of the alleged fraud, the companies that lost billions of shillings. What recourse do they have when the justice system seemingly fails to deliver?
It's a question that resonates deeply with anyone who's been affected by corporate crime.
It really does.
The sense of injustice must be profound when someone seemingly escapes accountability for actions that have far-reaching consequences.
Absolutely. It raises questions about the effectiveness of the legal system in holding powerful individuals and corporations responsible for their actions.
It's a valid concern.
But let's get back to the judge's decision.
go.
If the prosecution's case was so weak, why didn't the judge simply dismiss it outright?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
While the prosecution's case had undoubtedly been severely compromised, the judge acknowledged the gravity of the accusations.
Right.
And the potential for future developments.
Uh-huh.
So instead of dismissing the case entirely, he made a significant ruling.
Okay.
Stating that proceeding to trial without sufficient evidence would be preposterous.
So he essentially recognized that the prosecution was in a bind.
Yeah.
But didn't want to shut the door completely on the possibility of future prosecution.
Precisely. He left the door open for the possibility of charges being reinstated if new evidence were to surface.
Interesting.
It's a nuanced decision that reflects the complexities of the case.
So Devani walks free, but with the possibility of future charges looming over him.
That's right.
It's a far cry from the decisive victory he might have hoped for.
Indeed. He's free for now, but the shadow of the Triton oil scandal still hangs over him.
Right.
And the possibility of new evidence emerging means he can't truly escape the consequences of his alleged actions.
Wow. It creates a sense of unease and unresolved tension.
You can say that again.
The story isn't quite over yet.
Nope.
But for the moment, let's shift our focus to the public reaction to this outcome.
Okay.
How did people respond to the news that Devani was a free man?
The public reaction was, as you might expect, a mixed bag of emotions.
Right.
Some people were outraged, viewing the decision to drop the charges as a miscarriage of justice.
Makes sense.
They pointed to the immense financial losses and the years Devani spent evading responsibility.
Uh-huh.
To them, it seemed like a slap in the face to the principles of accountability and fairness.
It's understandable why they would feel that way.
Absolutely.
It can be incredibly frustrating to see someone accused of such serious wrongdoing seemingly slip through the cracks of the legal system.
Right.
On the other hand, there were those who emphasized the importance of due process and the presumption of innocence.
Mm-hmm.
They argued that while the allegations against Devani were serious, mm-hmm. the prosecution simply couldn't meet the burden of proof required for a conviction.
Right.
To them, the decision to drop the charges, while disappointing, was ultimately the right one, upholding a fundamental legal principle.
It's a tough situation.
So it becomes a clash of principles. The desire for justice versus the adherence to due process.
It's a classic dilemma.
It's a dilemma that often arises in complex cases like this.
It does.
Where does the line blur between seeking accountability and ensuring a fair trial?
That's the million-dollar question.
It's a question that legal scholars and ethicists grapple with constantly.
For sure.
And there are rarely easy answers.
Very true.
The Devani case highlights the inherent tensions within the justice system.
Absolutely.
And the challenges of balancing competing interests.
No doubt about it.
It's a reminder that the pursuit of justice is rarely a straightforward path.
Nope. There are twists and turns, unexpected obstacles, and often outcomes that leave us questioning the very system designed to deliver fairness.
You got it.
It's a sobering thought.
It really is.
And one that lingers long after the headlines fade.
That's for sure.
But before we get too lost in these weighty reflections, let's bring it back to our listener.
Right.
After hearing all of this, what are your thoughts?
If you were in the DPP's shoes facing a weakened case and the immense pressure of public scrutiny, what decision would you have made?
Right.
Would you have pursued the case, knowing the odds were stacked against you?
Uh-huh.
Or would you have made the difficult choice to cut your losses and accept that justice, in this instance, might look different than what many had hoped for?
It's a complex question with no easy answers.
It really is.
And it's one that we encourage you to ponder as we delve further into the lasting implications of the Triton oil scandal.
And explore what this case tells us about the challenges of holding powerful individuals accountable in a system often perceived as tilted in their favor.
It's a crucial conversation to have.
It's fascinating how this case, even with its twists and turns, ultimately circles back to a fundamental question.
Right.
What happens when those accused of financial crimes, especially those involving vast sums of money, manage to evade accountability? What message does that send?
It's a question that strikes at the core of public trust in the legal system and the institutions meant to regulate financial dealings.
Yeah.
When individuals like Devani, accused of orchestrating a massive fraud, walk free,
right,
it can erode that trust,
mm-hmm.
leaving people feeling disillusioned and vulnerable.
It almost feels like a betrayal of sorts, doesn't it?
Yeah, I can see that.
Like the system designed to protect them has somehow failed.
That sense of betrayal is understandable, especially for those directly impacted by the alleged fraud.
Right.
The companies that suffered financial losses, their employees, investors, and even ordinary consumers who might have felt the ripple effects of disrupted fuel supplies.
Right.
They all have a stake in seeing justice served.
Absolutely. It raises concerns about whether the legal system as it currently stands is adequately equipped to handle complex financial crimes, especially those that transcend national borders.
For sure.
It took years to extradite Devani from the UK.
Right.
And even then, the prosecution stumbled due to factors like uncooperative witnesses and the passage of time. It makes you wonder if there are inherent limitations that make pursuing these cases incredibly difficult.
You've hit upon a crucial point.
Yeah.
The Devani case exposes the vulnerabilities of legal systems in a globalized world.
Right.
Criminals can exploit jurisdictional loopholes.
Yeah.
Hide assets across borders.
Mm-hmm.
And leverage legal complexities to delay proceedings and frustrate efforts to hold them accountable.
It's a mess.
It's a daunting challenge for law enforcement agencies and prosecutors.
Right.
Who often find themselves playing catch-up in a rapidly evolving landscape of financial crime.
It feels like a constant game of cat and mouse with those accused of financial crimes, always one step ahead.
Often, yes.
So where do we go from here?
That's the question.
How do we strengthen the system to ensure that justice prevails even in these complex and challenging cases?
There's no easy fix.
Right.
It requires a multi-pronged approach.
Okay.
Involving enhanced international cooperation,
mm-hmm.
streamlined extradition processes,
okay.
stronger whistleblower protections, and a more robust framework for asset recovery.
Makes sense.
We also need to invest in specialized investigative units with the expertise and resources to unravel sophisticated financial schemes.
It sounds like a tall order.
It is.
But a necessary one if we're serious about tackling financial crime effectively.
Exactly.
And what about the role of public awareness?
Oh, that's crucial.
It seems like shining a light on these cases,
right.
raising public outrage and demanding accountability from those in power can be a powerful tool for change.
Absolutely. Public pressure can be a catalyst for reform.
Right.
When citizens demand transparency, ethical conduct, and a justice system that serves the interests of the many, not just the privileged few,
yeah.
it forces those in power to pay attention and take action.
I hope so.
The Devani case, while frustrating in its outcome, has ignited a conversation about corporate accountability.
Yeah.
And the need for a more robust legal framework to deter and punish financial crimes.
Right.
That's a conversation worth continuing.
It's a conversation that transcends national borders.
For sure.
And impacts economies and societies worldwide.
Absolutely.
And it's one that we as engaged citizens have a responsibility to participate in.
Right.
Demanding a fairer, more just system that holds those who abuse their power accountable for their actions.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, listeners, we've taken you deep into the murky waters of the Triton oil scandal.
It's been a journey.
We've explored the intricate web of allegations, the dramatic escape and extradition, the shocking decision to drop the charges, and the broader implications of this case for the fight against financial crime.
It's a complicated one.
It's a story that raises more questions than it answers, but that's precisely what makes it so compelling.
You got that right.
We encourage you to continue exploring, to dig deeper, and to form your own conclusions about this complex and multifaceted case.
Ouch. Yeah, do your own research.
What lessons can we learn from the Triton oil scandal?
That's a good question.
How can we, as individuals and as a society, contribute to a more just and equitable world where financial crimes are swiftly and effectively addressed?
Important questions to consider.
Those are questions worth pondering.
I think so.
And as always, we thank you for joining us on The Deep Dive.
It's been a pleasure.
Where we strive to illuminate the complexities of our world and empower you with the knowledge to navigate its challenges.
Until next time.
Until next time, keep exploring.
Keep questioning.
And keep demanding a better future for all.
Season 1 of the Kenya's Blueprint, we look at a colossus of an entity, Kenya Cooperative Creameries, KCC. We present the making, the journey, and the breaking of an empire. Weekly episodes on acute.co.ke. Subscribe to get notified once an episode is released.